Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning and welcome to Jewish History and Destiny. I'm Rabbi Danny Saxton of the Sunny Road Kehillah. It always is a great privilege to be with you on a Friday morning. And this Friday is Erev Shabbos Parshas Korach. Tomorrow we read from the Torah portion of Korach, and we learn about one of the great tragic situations and episodes in the Torah, the rebellion of Korach and his followers. And there's so much to think about and understand and learn from the rebellion of Korach, because Korach is the quintessential example of machloikas, of veribles, of creating fraction and division and arguments and splitting a community. And we see that Korach himself was a very accomplished individual. Korach came from one of the most prominent families of Shevet Levi. Korach and his family had the great privilege of carrying the Mishkan. The Mishkan was in the desert. The Jews were commanded to build the sanctuary, and it was a mobile sanctuary, and so they could take it apart and carry it with them when they moved from place to place in the desert. Last week we learned about the Meraglim and the terrible failure of the mission of the spies. They came back with a bad report. They sent the Jewish people into absolute panic and a downward spiral, the consequences of which that generation were now decreed to die in the desert and wouldn't have the privilege to enter into the land because of the terrible report of the spies. And the people are now going to be in the desert for 40 years, and the task of carrying the holy Mishkan was given to the Levim, and Korach and his family had that privilege, which is one of the most important roles within all of the Jewish people. Yet Korach is still upset and dissatisfied. Rashi tells us because he believes he was overlooked, and the leadership of his particular family of Shevet Levi was given to somebody else and not to him. And as a result of that, Korach then wages war against Moshe and Aaron. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. We're talking about the greatest human being ever to walk this earth, the person who led the Jewish people out of Egypt, confronted Paro, and was Hashem's representative, the person who, under whose leadership the plagues in Egypt took place, who led the people through the sea, which crashed on the chasing Egyptian army, the individual who received the Torah and went up the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. Such is Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah testifies that Moshe, Ish Moshe Anav Mikol Adam Al Pnei Adama, who was the most humble person that ever existed. The Torah calls Moshe Eved Hashem. Hashem testifies that he was a true servant of Hashem. I mean, there's just no greater achievement in terms of humility and altruistic behavior than Moshe. Yet Korach still goes for him. It's quite unbelievable. And Korach should have learned his lesson, the lesson of the spies. When you go up against Moshe, it doesn't end good for you. But still, Korach is undeterred. He doesn't learn from the mistakes of others, and he takes on Moshe. He's got the chutzpah to take on Moshe. So let's try and understand, what is it that drove Korach? Why does he decide to actually accuse Moshe of nepotism, of taking all the power for himself and for Aaron, of leading the Jewish people with corruption for his own benefit and his own agenda, like the modern politicians of today? Moshe was the furthest thing from that. And Moshe was a holy, righteous person who put aside all of his interests and his self-benefit for the sake of Hashem and for the sake of the Jewish people. And there's so many countless examples of that in the Torah. And so, nonetheless, Korach still tries to stage a rebellion and get support in order to undermine and attack Moshe's leadership. And he goes so far, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that, the pasuk says that, Chashiduhu la'asos ish, eshes ish, shneemar v'yiknu le'Moshe b'machene. The pasuk Tehillim says that they use a language of yiknu, that they accused Moshe in the camp, melabit shekol echad ve'echad, kana es ishto mi'Moshe, lashon kinu v'stira. The Gemara in Sota says that this lashon of kinu means that they actually accused Moshe of acting immorally with a woman in the Jewish people. That's how far they went, which is quite unbelievable. It's like, you know, I don't know if any of our listeners have had the privilege to meet holy, righteous people, Gedolim. We call them Gedolim, the greats of our generation. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Liashuv, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Moshe Sternbuch is still alive today. These people are holy people that are dedicated entirely to Torah and mitzvahs and Hashem. To accuse them of nepotism, of self-interest, of immorality, it's just crazy to make such accusations. Yet that's what we see happen to Moshe Rabbeinu with Korach's rebellion. So there's a few lessons to learn. The first one is, how does Moshe react to this? So Moshe, it says, the yipol al panav, he fell on his face. He didn't even respond. He didn't even stand up to defend himself. He knew how wrong and how false and how evil this rebellion was. And so he turned straight to Hashem. He doesn't even engage with those that, with Korach and his followers that are leading the rebellion. And so that's the first lesson, is that sometimes when we face this kind of behavior, we shouldn't even engage because it only makes it worse when we do. And the second very powerful lesson in terms of Moshe's response for us and for all generations is that it says that Moshe goes and approaches Dasan v'Aviram. He goes to Dasan and Aviram, were two very prominent leaders within the Jewish people, and they backed Korach. They supported Korach. And Moshe, understanding Korach has his own grievances because he felt that he was sidelined, but Moshe is only following Hashem's instructions. And he goes to Dasan Aviram and says, you know, let's discuss this. Let's try and work this out. Let's try and prevent it from getting to a major escalation. And Dasan and Aviram refuse to even speak to Moshe. They won't even talk to him. And so one might say, what's Moshe doing going to Dasan and Aviram? These guys are supporting Korach with this ridiculous, absurd claim. And yet, they're the ones that are causing the problems here. Why does Moshe go to them? They should come to Moshe and ask him for forgiveness. But we see the very powerful lesson of Moshe, that even though he has been wronged, and even though he has been falsely accused, and even though there's this diabolical behavior towards him, he swallows his pride and he goes to them in order to make shalom. He tries to patch it up and find a resolution and work through a peaceful way forward in this conflict. And so it's such a powerful lesson, isn't it? That even if we falsely accused, and even if we're on the receiving end of ridiculous, vicious behavior, we should try to swallow our pride. Don't engage in the initial attack, and try and make peace and patch it up and ensure that it doesn't get into a massive rift and a huge fire and gets out of control. So that's the first lesson we learn from Moshe's reaction and behavior to this rebellion of Korach. Please stay with us. We're going to learn many more powerful lessons when we come back.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Rabbi Danny Saxteen from the Sunny Road Kehillah. You're listening to Chai FM, 101.9 Chai FM. And our show is on Jewish history and destiny. And we're learning about the terrible rebellion of Korach against Moshe and how Moshe initially deals with it, which is a great example to us that don't get caught up in the fires and in the battles and the accusations. Initially, when one sees one's on the receiving end, try not to engage and even try and work it out and patch it up and find amical, peaceful solutions. Because machloikas, feribles, fights, they are a raging fire that destroy everything in their path. And unfortunately, as we see so often in families, in communities, in situations, that the machloikas, the feribles, cause so much harm. And sometimes these fires rage on for years and years, for decades, and people forget the original conflict and they just know that there's a war and there's so many casualties in that war. And it really is destructive and it really is sad and it really causes so much harm and so much damage. And so we should all be switched on and our eyes should be opened to the dangers of machloikas and the harm that they cause. And we should do our best to try and mitigate the damage done and try and close the rift as soon as possible, because the longer we leave it, the worse it gets and the bigger the wildfires are. There's a famous story about the Ponovitch Arov. The Ponovitch Arov was Rabbi Kahneman, the great, brilliant, genius and charismatic leader of the Ponovitch Yeshiva in Lithuania. He was also a member of parliament, and he survived the war. His family was wiped out. His wife and children were murdered by the Nazis. He got out just before and tried to get them out and didn't succeed. And he went to Eretz Yisrael and he bought a piece of land. Interestingly enough, he raised the money in South Africa and he bought property in Bromfontein. He sold that property. And with that money, he was able to buy land just outside Tel Aviv in a place called Bnei Brak. And on that, in that land, he built the Ponovitch Yeshiva, which became one of the greatest yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael still to this day. And the Ponovitch Arov was in London. He was a very skillful and talented fundraiser, and because he was such a genuine person and he truly believed that the investment in Torah was essential for the future of the Jewish people. And he was able to share that message, which is the truth, which is true. The future of our people depends on our connection to Torah and our study of Torah and the next generation being educated in Torah. And on a fundraising trip to London, somebody publicly insulted him. And the Rabbonim of London were very embarrassed and they felt absolutely terrible that this great Rav, this great leader and visionary of the Jewish people is embarrassed in their city. And they wanted to, put this person in chayrim. They wanted to put this person in excommunication. And they went to Ponovitch Arov and they apologized to him. And they said, "We're going to excommunicate this individual who behaved in such a terrible way." And the Ponovitch Arov said to them, he said, "I don't want you to do that. I don't want to make the situation worse." He says, "I've got a Kabbalah. I have a tradition from the Chofetz Chaim who said that he gave me a bracha to say that I would be matzliach and successful in my desire to build the Jewish people and contribute to the Jewish people. But he said, I'll tonight on condition that I don't get involved with machloikas. Because when there's a machloikas and when there's a fight and argument, everybody loses. And he said, in those circumstances, I'll lose. And so I don't want to create a machloikas over here, and let's just let it go." And so that should be our attitude and our view of these situations, as hard as it is. And it really is hard, because very often we are on the receiving end and we feel very hurt and very aggrieved, and we are human beings with emotions, and those emotions run deep. And when we have been hurt and disappointed and attacked, it really hurts. It's something that's very hard to get over and something that's very difficult to let go of. But ultimately, we should learn from Korach that the longer it rages on and the more time that this machloikas continues, the greater the pain and the more the casualties on all sides and the worse the circumstances turn out to be. So we should try, and we don't always succeed. As we see, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't succeed. Moshe was not able to stop Korach and to stop his supporters. And their death was a brutal, sudden one, which was the earth opens up and they were swallowed into the earth. It was a terrible, calamitous conclusion of that rebellion. And so sometimes we're not successful, but we should have the attitude that we'll swallow our pride and we'll try and make shalom and we'll try and heal the wounds and end the raging fires. Because if we don't, they just keep going and it gets worse. And it actually is passed down through generations. That's how bad it could be. So that is the first powerful lesson that we learn. Try and make shalom. Try fix the problem and realize how I should be open to the devastating and destructive power of machloikas. There's a beautiful idea I heard from Rabbi Shmuel Silber about part of the problem of Korach. Why was he so dissatisfied? And why, as I mentioned, Rashi said he felt he was overlooked. But why was it that he couldn't let it go? And he dug in his heels and he planned this rebellion and attack on Moshe. And one of the reasons perhaps is because he looked at himself and his life and he looked at Moshe and Aaron and he felt unhappy and he felt dissatisfied because Moshe was the great leader of Klal Yisrael and he was the one who was recognized as our leader, as the holy man who's the connection to God who led us out of Egypt and received the Torah. Wow. Talk about public recognition. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. Aaron is the holiest man in Klal Yisrael. He's the one who leads the service of Hashem. And he also gets tremendous recognition and acclaim. And look at me. I am one of the family heads of Shevet Levi. I do have the privilege of carrying the Mishkan and being an example to the rest of Klal Yisrael, being part of Levi, but nobody knows who I am. And I'm very much in the shadows. And perhaps that is one of the reasons, one of the gripes that motivated Korach to attack Moshe and stage this rebellion. And perhaps we should have a different view to that. There was a very righteous woman, non-Jewish woman. Her name was Irina Sandler. And she wrote a famous book called Irina's Children. She was a seamstress in Poland, in Warsaw, during the Second World War. She was born in 1910. She died in 2008. And she would go into the Warsaw ghetto and work as a seamstress and get some help from those in the ghetto. And in her bag that had her sewing supplies, she had a secret compartment and she would hide Jewish babies in that compartment and she would smuggle them out of the ghetto. She saved 2,500 Jewish children, this woman, Irina Sandler. 2,500 Jewish children were saved through her efforts. And the Nazis suspected her and they beat her. And it didn't deter her. She kept going. She kept going in and smuggling the Jewish children out. She was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. It was given to Al Gore for global warming and not to her. But nonetheless, she did this unbelievable act of saving thousands of Jewish children. There's an amazing principle in the Chovos HaLevavos. The Chovos HaLevavos, Duties of Love, which is one of the great Jewish books of Musa, of self-development, Chovos HaLevavos writes that when we do a good deed in this world and we are seen and it's noticed and recognized, so we often get our reward in this world. But when we do a good deed and it's not recognized and not noticed in this world, so we'll be rewarded for that in the next world, in the world to come. And so maybe that's why I shouldn't get the Nobel Prize, although, you know, I suppose we all know about many of the institutions in the world that are anti-Semitic, and the Nobel Committee is no exception. So saving Jewish children wasn't seen as such a great act. But anyway, perhaps The spiritual reason is because Hashem wanted her reward to remain intact in the next world. And for that kind of heroism of saving 2,500 Jewish children, can you imagine how many Jews are alive today due to her bravery and due to her righteousness, Irina Sandler? And so the reward for that, a Nobel Prize, would have taken away from her reward in the next world. And it's saved up for her when she gets to the other side, and she will get her due recompense for her righteous acts in this world. And so perhaps we could say that that was part of the problem with Korach, is he wanted public recognition. He wanted to be acknowledged for what he does and for his righteousness. And he was a righteous man up until that point. And that's what was driving him in his rebellion against Moshe and Aaron. And, you know, it's such an important point in our world that we live in today, because we're living a world of publicity and a world of Facebook and Instagram. And unless we've got our millions of followers and our pictures and our achievements are plastered on the screens around the globe, we feel that, well, maybe I'm not significant and I'm not doing anything important and I'm not successful. I'll give you an example of our world we live in. So as we know, the World Cup is on. And so it's a great time for all soccer fans because there's wonderful football being played and it's getting very exciting. And there's been a great, it's been a great start, I think, to the World Cup. There've been some wonderful games and wonderful goals and a lot of amazing football. And one of the favorites for the World Cup is Spain. And Spain played against Cape Verde, who are completely unknown and you know, are seen as one of the weakest teams. And we expected that Spain would absolutely destroy them. But Cape Verde put up a very brave fight. And their hero, the unsung hero of Cape Verde, was their goalkeeper. His name is Vozina. Vozina is 40 years old, and he plays for a second division club in Portugal called Chaves. And nobody knows of him. And he had a tremendous game against Spain. He pulled off 7 outstanding saves. And before that match, he had 50,000 Instagram followers. And as we speak now, he's got 13,750,000 followers. So his Instagram account exploded as a result of his performance. So that's the world we're living in today. And unless we have those millions of followers and unless we're, you know, our image is on the screens around the world, we feel like, well, maybe I am not doing much and I'm not achieving my potential and I'm not reaching the stars as I should be. And that's not right. That's not correct. And that's the principle of the Chovos Levavos, and that's one of the messages from Korach, is that if we're doing good and we're behaving in a moral, upright, righteous way, even if nobody sees us, Hashem sees us. And Hashem knows what we're doing. And our reward will be intact for the next world. And we should find solace in the knowledge that Hashem sees everything. And at the right time, we will get our due recompense for our efforts and for our actions in this world. And it's not only, yes, there are some leaders and there are those that are in the lights, and we are those that are making the headlines, and we wish them everything of the best. But if you're not there, it doesn't mean you're not successful. And we could achieve tremendous success and make a huge impact on the world if we are a quiet individual doing the right thing, even without being in the headlines and having the millions of Instagram followers. And that's a very important lesson for our times, and I think a very important lesson for the youth of our generation, that we're not only successful when we're in the public eye and we're getting accolades and acknowledgement from the world. We could also be just as or even more successful even if we are not recognized and it's unknown, like Irina Sandler, who saved 2,500 Jewish people with tremendous acts of righteousness. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
There's one more lesson I'd like to share about Korach and the Torah's narrative of what happened. The Torah tells us that Moshe was absolutely flabbergasted at these claims and the attack from Korach and his followers. And the Torah tells us, "Vayichar leMoshe mo'od." He was very, very upset and distressed. "Vayomer al Hashem." Moshe says to Hashem, "Al tefen al minchasam." Don't turn to their offering. So Moshe made a jewel. He made a test. He said, "Tomorrow, let's see whose offering is accepted by Hashem: Aaron's offering or your offering, Korach and your followers." And Moshe then prayed to Hashem that their offering should not be accepted. So, as we've been saying, who was in the right over here and who was in the wrong? So I don't think there's ever been a case in history where it's so clear and obvious who's right and who's wrong. Maybe the Second World War and us fighting against the Nazis. But Moshe was 100% in the right, and Korach and his followers were 100% in the wrong. And so why is Moshe concerned? What does Moshe have to daven to Hashem? Have to pray to Hashem that their offering is not received? It's a very interesting question. And the Altar of Kelm, Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, who was the great, he was a Talmud of Yisrael Salanta and the great rabbi of the Kelm Yeshiva, who was born in 1824 and died in 1898. He said that we see from here the power of tefillah, and we shouldn't underestimate the tremendous power of tefillah, of prayer, that even a individual who's not righteous, even an individual who's in the wrong, when they pray, when they daven, so there is a power and a force that they generate, which has a great significance in the higher worlds, in the spiritual worlds. So we learn from here the great power of prayer, says Rav Simcha Zissel. We see that even if somebody's not righteous, but their prayers have an effect and they can make a significant difference to the situation and to the equation. And there are a number of examples of that. For example, the Gemara Makos, we see that there's an interesting halacha that if a person kills b'shoigeg, in other words, somebody kills somebody else accidentally, it wasn't premeditated, it was completely an accident. Like the example of the Gemara, somebody is chopping wood in the forest and they lift back the axe and the head of the axe flies off and hits somebody and kills them, God forbid. So such an the halacha says such a person has to go to an ir miklat, which is what's called a city of refuge, and that person remains there until the death of the Kohen Gadol, and then they can return back home. And so the Gemara tells us that the mother of the Kohen Gadol would go to the Arei Miklat and would give gifts and treats and bake delicious food for those people that were exiled to those cities, because she was concerned that they would pray to Hashem that the Kohen Gadol would die and therefore they could return home. So we see from here that somebody, you know, whatever happens to us is not coincidental. It's not Hashem runs the world. We don't have access to the account of every soul. And whatever we experience, we're supposed to experience. And whatever we go through is part of a tikkun, part of an opportunity for us to cleanse our souls and to develop and grow spiritually. So whatever happens, there's a reason why it happens, even though we may not understand it. And so these people, unfortunately, were the cause of the death of somebody else accidentally. So that's part of their neshama and their journey. But still, So it doesn't mean that they're very righteous and they're on a very high level, but nonetheless, their prayers have a significance and have a power, and their prayers actually go a long way to make a difference spiritually. So therefore, she would give them treats so they wouldn't daven that her son would die. That's one example. Another example is a very famous example of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the great Tana, Rabbi Meir Bal Hanes, and the Gemara tells us that on the way to the Beis Midrash, he always would pass an area where there was a gang of juvenile delinquents, and they would attack him and they would mock him and they would beat him, and they made his life an absolute misery, this gang of delinquents. And he came home and he told his wife. His wife was a very famous woman, a very righteous woman, named was Bruria, and he told her that he's davening that Hashem will take care of these individuals because They're making his life such a misery. And she responded and she said to him that the verse in Tehillim says, Yitamu chatai min ha'aretz, or Shaim od enam, that Hashem should destroy the sins, not choitim, the sinners, but the sins of the world. We should daven that they should change their bad ways, not that they should be removed from the world. And he agreed that she was exactly right. And so he did, so he davened. And actually these kids did tshuva, and they repented and they became righteous Jews. And so we see from here that Rav Meir Bergman, who is one of he is actually the son-in-law of Rav Shach, he says that how could Rabbi Meir daven that these people should do tshuva? Tshuva is dependent on bechira. In other words, each individual, Hashem created us all with free choice. And we can choose whatever we want to do. We want to choose if we want to be righteous or not. We want to choose if we want to behave in an evil way or not. That is actually in our control and our hands. That's there's very little that actually is in our control. But that's the thing that is. As the Gemara says, Kol b'day shamayim chut mi'yirushamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven. In other words, whatever happens to us is sent to us from Hashem. As we all know, with regards to our house, with regards to our panasa, with regards to our family, there's so much out of our hands. Virtually everything's out of our hands. The only thing we control is our Yerushalayim. Only thing we control is our fear of heaven. And so, Rabbi Meir, how could Rabbi Meir daven for these delinquents? That's in their hands. It's got nothing to do with him. It's got nothing to do with anything else. That's entirely in their own, it's their own choice of how they want to live. And says Rabbi Meir Bergman, we see from here that even though Bechira, free choice, is in the hands of individual, Tefillah is actually stronger than Bechira. So if we're davening and we have prayer, it influences, it helps, it opens up doors, it pushes us in a direction and even influences our Bechira and the free choice of an individual, which is quite an incredible thing, quite an amazing idea. And so we shouldn't underestimate the great power of Tefillah and the great opportunity that we all have to develop and grow. And through tefillah, we can open up avenues and open up doors that we never imagined were there before. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Today is the Jewish date of the 4th of Tammuz. And today is significant because it's the Yotzat of Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Meir Tam. He was born in 1100 and he died in 1171. He was a Talmudic commentator known as Rabbeinu Tam. He was the grandson of Rashi, and Rabbeinu Tam was the greatest sage of his time. So after the passing of his grandfather Rashi, he assumed the mantle of the Gadol HaDor, of the leader of the Jewish people, and people flocked to his academy in France to hear his Talmudic discourses. These lectures served as the basis for the Tosfos commentary, which was compiled by students and today is printed on every standard page of the Talmud. So a regular page of the Talmud, you have the Gemara in the middle, you have Rashi's commentary that is near the center of the page, and you have Tosfos, which is based on the teachings of Rabbeinu Tam, on the outside of the Gemara text. Rabbeinu Tam was an extremely successful wine merchant and financier. When his home was attacked by crusaders in 1146, he was stabbed repeatedly in the head and dragged out to a field to die. He miraculously survived and lived another 25 years. Tomorrow, which is tonight and tomorrow, the 5th of Tammuz, this coming Shabbos, is also an interesting date because on that date, the 5th of Tammuz, 1946, Jewish refugees from the Holocaust, with no other place to go, returned to their hometown in Kielce, Poland, and were attacked by the townspeople in a bloody pogrom that left 42 Jews dead and 80 wounded. The pogrom began when rumors spread that Jews had kidnapped a Polish child. Polish policemen and soldiers entered the Jewish residences and began the violence. The Jews were then attacked outside by mobs in a fray that lasted 5 hours. Some 3 million Polish Jews had been murdered in the Holocaust, yet this pogrom, occurring 15 months after the end of World War II, was a horrific aftershock. and was a clear message to the Polish Jewish survivors of the Holocaust that Poland was not a place for them to be and that they couldn't return back to their previous homes. And thousands of Jews were murdered in pogroms after World War II in Poland when they tried to return back to their hometowns. There are many stories about it. My Rebbe, Rabbi Wein, had a member of his shul in Miami who was a survivor. And she went back many years after the Holocaust. She went back to her old house. And her neighbor, her childhood neighbor, a non-Jewish woman, had now moved into her house, her family's house, when they were removed and murdered by the Nazis. And she said, "Bella, I thought you were dead." You know, like surprising, the non-Jewish neighbor said, I didn't expect to see you again. Well, bad luck, because I've got your house and you're not getting it back. And that was the attitude. And the Jews were attacked and there were terrible pogroms. So this Shabbos is the anniversary of that. It's actually the 80th anniversary of the most brutal pogrom in the town of Kielce in Poland. And it showed that Jews were no longer welcome in Poland and could not return to their previous homes. So let's move on. And we see that Saturday night, is the 6th of Tammuz. And the 6th of Tammuz is significant because on the 6th of Tammuz, exactly 50 years ago, on the 4th of July, 1976, as America was celebrating its bicentennial, Israeli commandos performed a spectacular raid to rescue 100 Jews held hostage at Entebbe Airport in Uganda. 1 week earlier, an Air France flight was hijacked by Palestinian terrorists who landed the plane in Uganda with support of the dictator Idi Amin. The terrorists threatened to kill the Jewish hostages if the Israeli government did not release convicted Palestinian terrorists. Amazingly, the flight crew all voluntarily chose to stay with the Jewish captors rather than be released. Upon their return to Paris, they were reprimanded by Air France executives and temporarily suspended from duty. Unbelievable. The government of Israel refused to negotiate with the terrorists and quickly planned the rescue mission. Conveniently, Israel had the blueprints for the building in which the hostages were held. It was built by an Israeli construction firm. 200 Israeli soldiers were flown to Entebbe. They brought along a black Mercedes disguised to look like Idi Amin's personal car. The raid took a total of 58 minutes, in which all the terrorists were killed and all but three of the hostages were safely rescued. The raid, dubbed Operation Thunderbolt, was subsequently renamed Operation Yonatan after Colonel Yonatan Netanyahu, the brother of Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, the leader of the raid, and the only Israeli soldier killed. So we remember this Sunday, the 6th of Tammuz, the incredible 50 years later, the unbelievable Entebbe raid, the daring saving of the Jewish hostages by the brave soldiers of Tzahal, and a great success for the Jewish people, a great joy and celebration for the Jewish people. Thank you so much for listening. Wishing everybody a wonderful Shabbos and have a great day.